It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
I was going to see if you jumped in.
I was waiting for you.
I know you were. So I thought I'd mess with you.
Good morning. Well, actually, I've got to tell you something. This is awful. When the introduction came in, I don't know why it popped into my head, but I started thinking about Jose Jimenez. Do you remember the comedian Jose Jimenez?
Yes.
Has he?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
and he would go,
I remember him.
Hello, my name Jose Jimenez. And so I was thinking that I was going to say, hello, you drive me crazy, you know, in the same kind of intonation. But anyway, you didn't even give me the chance to tell you that you drive me crazy, beloved husband. Good morning, Hezzy. How are you?
Good
somehow
morning.
I
love you,
somehow both. I think I got dissed in that kind of thing. So, but it's okay. I mean, I'm used to it.
No, not at all. Well, let's go right into the...
Let's not. I want to talk about something.
Okay. Go for it, hon.
I had a revelation this morning that... Because I was thinking about the Avalon, which we're going to talk about today, which is a four-door touring sedan, top of the Toyota line. The only thing above the Avalon is you start getting into the Lexus. Okay? And so there's very little difference that I can see in the Avalon and whatever the next lowest level of Lexus might be in a similar kind of car, as far as luxury things go. Talk about that in a little while. But that got me thinking about car prices. And it's interesting also before we came on that Hezzy was pointing out we need to talk about the car industry sometime, that there's a lot of, you know, a lack of profitability. And Laurie and I, strange enough, were discussing sort of the economics of this country right now. And because my business, my small business, relies on people having enough discretionary income that they want to do one of these nice trips, go to Argentina, go to Europe, go to Africa, whatever, for a week or so. And they have to be willing to spend and able to spend a minimum of about $5,000, which doesn't sound like a lot of money anymore, but the people that have that kind of money are very judicious in how they spend their money. And right now it appears to me that people are more or less sitting on their money, which happened before. We're sort of used to this. It hurts the business, but it's not an uncommon thing to have happen. Anyway, that led me to think, well, what are people paying for cars? And so I got on the internet, and I typed in the average price of I typed in the average price of a car in 2018. And I actually got statistics for 2017, 18, and I guess up until March of 19. But in 2000, I just think these are very interesting, but in 2018, the average price of a full-size sedan was $35,250. That's the average price. Kelly Blue Book had it about $33,000. You know, so I'm just looking at different statistics, but they're all going to be in the ballpark. So anyway, $35,000 for an average full-size car. But when it said that the price had increased by about 1.6% overall because people are moving away from small cars, compact cars, mini cars, small SUVs, and are moving into mid-size SUVs. Well, guess what the average price of a mid-size SUV is? About $33,000. If you get a full-sized SUV, it averages about, a full-sized luxury one averages about $62,000. So it's a big change in those two. And pickup trucks in general now average about $41,000. And I've told the story about buying my first pickup truck. I paid $6,000 for it, brand new off the lot, and drove it for 100,000 miles. was a long time
that
ago.
That was last century.
But now well, yes, exactly. And they've gotten, but look how popular they've got. I mean, part of the pricing of these things has to do with the popularity of the vehicle. And when people start liking it, they start doing things to it. Now, we had buckets, not buckets, we had bench seats, 3-speed on the column. We had a V8 because you needed it for hauling things around, but it was basically a plain truck. And now trucks have air conditioning, safety features, you know, monitoring this, hauling that. You can get all kinds of combinations, and all of that adds to the price. So pickups these days run about $41,000. So I just thought it would be interesting when we talk about the Avalon or any of the vehicles that we talk about that the listening population – or eventually I'll put this in one of my write-ups, but people ought to know sort of what they should expect to pay for a car. And then when you go shopping, you don't have sticker shock. That was hard to say. You don't have sticker shock when you look at a full-size sedan and it's $40,000. That's $5,000 over average. Well, what's on it? Do you like it? Do you like the style of it? Can you afford it? All those kinds of things figure in if you know your baseline of what you're working with. Does that make sense, Ezzy? I guess that's asking.
Yeah, it does.
Does that make
it makes
sense?
All the sense in the world. Well, you know, there used to be a time when pricing was so much less, but that was at a different economic time as well, and we weren't we weren't doing as well economically as a nation, and we were coming out of bad times, and then we got into good times, and now there's again a struggle. Everything goes and fluctuates very, very much on a standard basis.
Yeah, there's cycles
everywhere in the world. It's a cycle.
Here's another consideration.
Sure.
And here's another consideration, and that is, I can't tell you what year it started, but in the not too distant past, China started buying up all the steel and metal raw materials that they could get, iron, steel, metals, and it affected multiple industries, because they stockpiled this stuff. Now,
well, that wasn't to build cars, though. They have an incredible expanding economy, buildings and all kinds of things that are going on, roads, structures, all kinds of stuff. So I mean, that was a lot more than cars that they bought all that stuff for.
Well, I guess my question was, you know, you're talking about the average price of a car, but my question is, what is the average cost of production of car? Well, there's no average cost of production, but the production cost of a vehicle.
Right. There would be an average cost of
surely that's increased, not proportionate to the increase in purchase prices.
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. It's sort of like gasoline, and I know we're off topic a little bit, but so what? This is supposed to be about cars and life. It's like gasoline. Gasoline keeps going up, but the cost to produce a gallon of gas keeps going down. Well, why is it so expensive then? Because there are taxes on taxes on taxes for every gallon of gasoline. Is that not true, Hesse?
Absolutely. Well,
there is a difference, though.
With gasoline, for example, all of a sudden it's collapsed in the last week. I mean, it's down to like $55 a barrel so much higher. It's really
Wouldn't it
dropped.
Be nice to see that at the pumps?
Yeah, but it takes a long time for it to drop in the pumps. But, you know, when you talk about the automotive industry, what's really fascinating is there should be a baseline of cost of production based on the factory, the item that's being the particular vehicle, the company that's doing it, the type of items that are part of that particular car. But so there are fixed costs, but then that's when you're going full steam ahead. So if you're producing 100,000 cars, maybe that's the baseline between profit and loss. And then when you go over that, so you have much more profit. But if you go under that to balance out the good days, then you might end up actually making a loss for the year. And that's where we are now. A lot of the car industry is under assault because sales are down. And also, as you said, John, the tastes of the consumer are changing. So And that's what's so interesting about the Avalon as well. Toyota believes very seriously that the sedan, even though it seems to not be the number one pick in so many manufacturers, they're sticking to it. They believe in it, and they believe that that will not go away. And interestingly enough, I think they might be right.
Well, I know you read the article that I wrote about this, and one of the things that I found so interesting about the Avalon is now they keep statistics on how long people keep cars, and people are keeping
right.
cars longer. Let's face it, I still have a 2010 Ford Edge. Why? Because it does everything I need. Do I wish it had a backup camera and some of that? Sure I do. Can I get along without it? Hey, I learned to drive with my mirrors, you know, 50 yeah. years ago. So that doesn't bother me at all. Does it get good gas mileage? It still gets about 20 miles to the gallon, and it's got 90,000 miles on it. Come on, you know. Mm. And where do we
yeah.
drive it? From here to the grocery store. This isn't like long, you know, long driving things anymore.
Right.
Would I like a Cadillac? Sure. Why would I want to spend the money when really I'm not trying to show anybody that anything. I have my vehicle because it serves the purpose for which I purchased it. And when you get
yeah.
that vehicle, and it's a good vehicle, and as Bugsy Lawler, who I also thought about this morning, God bless him. I hope you're doing better, Bugsy.
Yeah.
Know that you're in our thoughts and prayers all the time. But as Bugsy Lawler said, they don't make bad cars anymore. You get one of these nice cars, and you take care of it, and you keep it in the garage, it'll last a long time. And there's no
yeah.
reason to go out and spend a lot of the money. And truthfully, in the last couple of years, or last few years, we've seen, you know, the technology get to the point that all the things we wanted, safety-wise and all that, that's all on the cars now. So you're not buying one
yeah.
because it specifically has something. They all have don't run over a pedestrian. They all have monitor the car in front of you. They all have automatic stop if you back up. You know, you understand what I'm saying. And so when you get a car with all these
Absolutely.
Features on it and it's comfortable and it's quiet, you don't need another car in 2 years. You need another car in 10 years. And I think that, like you said, that changes the whole statistics of things.
And there are other mitigating
those
factors. For example, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, there are other mitigating factors that are even broader. And first of all, Uber, people aren't buying cars.
Right. That's very good. That's an excellent point, Lori.
Number two, as we've talked about in the past, the age group that is applying for the most new driver's licenses is 60 and mm-hmm. older. The age
yeah.
group that is applying for the least number of driver's license is the one that you would have thought was the most, and that's 18 to 26.
Well, our grandson's a perfect example. I mean, he works a mile from the house. Maybe, I would say that's about right, a little over a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Half the time, he's 18 years old. When I was 18, I couldn't think of anything but getting a driver's license. And a lot long after that about getting a car. You know what? He takes a bike to work. If the weather's
yeah,
bad, we run him over. We run him over there. And we talked about getting a vehicle. And I said, Danny, you need to get a driver's license. You don't have to buy a vehicle. You can drive mine, you know, back and forth to school.
Mm-hmm.
School's 10 or 15 minutes from here. So you can drive until you can afford to buy your own vehicle. But the truth is, if he doesn't want to buy a vehicle and we're tied up with our vehicles or whatever, he can call an Uber driver, and for $10, they'll take him to school. He can get a ride with a friend.
Right.
There's all kinds of alternatives today for most young people, especially in an urban environment, where they don't need to own a car.
I'd like to bring up another point, and this may seem like a stretch, but I don't think it is. I want to go back 25, 30 years ago when you dressed to go on a plane ride. You wore a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Or you wore a coat and a tie.
Exactly. You never just slummed off. You know.
It looked like you just came off the beach.
Yeah. I mean, people dressed to take a plane ride was a privilege. Tickets were expensive. People bought cars regularly. Often, like my grandfather, he would rotate a new car every year. Every year he would get a different car. But here's the thing.
Tell him about the Cadillac.
Well, I will in 1 second, because right. I want to make a point, and here's the point. Howard Johnson's Motor Lodges. People would drive to get to places. We would take road trips. We would spend the night at a Howard Johnson's, or we would stop for lunch and get a Howard Johnson's luncheon and an ice cream cone.
Yeah.
You know, our mindset for travel was different. We seemed to have had more time. We seemed to have taken more family trips. We seldom flew. We always drove unless we had to cross a body of water. And so the need, we put miles on the car, and the need to keep that car in shape and rotate into a new car as the family grew, the car, you know, grew. Those days are over. Those are not any those are no considerations any longer. And so
we wore a car out. It's the truth.
Really. And
the way they were built and everything, and they were fine, but we wore them out.
I mean, God bless Frontier Airlines. I've flown them. I love them. $29 one way. I mean, that's, you know, for a flight, that doesn't even pay for the gas. Yeah, so.
And when I was young, I've told this story, but we would get in the car in Bristol, Tennessee at 3 o'clock in the morning and drive to Kankakee, which is just south of Chicago, Illinois. We'd drive to Kankakee, Illinois, straight through. My father drove. It took almost 24 hours. We didn't think anything about it. That's what you did. You're right. I mean, you're exactly right.
And even buses. I mean, you can take a bus from Washington to D.C. to New York City these days, and it's a luxury, you know, road liner. I mean,
with a bathroom and everything.
So the pressures on owning and buying a car frequently are far different. The considerations have changed completely over the past 25 years. We use a car for different reasons, for different purposes, and for different methods, and we utilize different methods of transportation to get from point A to point B, whether it's an Uber or a train or a bus or a plane. But cars have somehow gone down in the pecking order of ways to get, you know, places.
Well, and back to this thing, car manufacturers make quality cars. So you've got a quality car that now you don't drive nearly as much or as often as maybe you used to. And I'm talking about people that live in cities, not a guy who owns a ranch out in Texas and drives thousands of miles. But I'm talking about, you know, Pinehurst is not a big city. I mean, it's just a town of Pinehurst. But people don't drive very far. Or take Charlotte. Charlotte's got a beltway, or take Atlanta. Again, Atlanta's got a lot of traffic. People in Atlanta don't like to drive. They schedule their times in the morning. They have to go to work. Sometimes there's a lot of carpooling. There's a lot of lanes for if you've got so many people. And so there's been a lot of things to make it easier to get around if you own a car.
Now, I'm going to
talk about that Cadillac before you forget.
Okay. Well, Johnny's always wanted a Cadillac, and the other day I went on to our local Cadillac dealer,
Clark.
Cadillac Chevrolet. Yeah. And in fact, I'd still like to go over and take a look at it. They had what was the year, honey, 19...
It was like a 96 or a 2005 or, you know. It was
Cadillac, what was it? I can't even remember the model.
Seville.
It was gorgeous. It obviously was a one-owner car. Obviously, it was an older person because it only had like 24,000 miles on it.
Yes.
The interior, the leather seats were not cracked. They were pristine. The floor mats were even clean. And the price was like under $4,000.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
It's a gorgeous car. Okay, it doesn't have all the modern, you know, safety features and stuff like
that.
Probably
got an AM, FM radio, of course, and that kind of thing.
But how many cars do you know have leather envelopes on the back of the front seats that you can put your magazine in if you're sitting in the second seat? Or, in fact, second row, you know, a whole bar seat. But the fact of the matter is, it was made then to be a luxurious car. And guess what? It's still luxurious car. Which brings us finally to the Toyota Avalon. We test drove the four-door Toyota Avalon Touring, which is the higher price range of the seven models and of the non
I don't know.
Oh, the non-hybrid models. So this is a top of the line car, and it's going to retail for $42,000. But I want to say something. Here's the comparables. The Toyota Avalon four-door Touring is compared to the Nissan Maxima and the Chrysler 300. Now, the Nissan Maxima and the Toyota Avalon are both front-wheel drive cars. The Chrysler 300 is a rear-wheel drive car, which in of itself is going to limit you in adverse weather. And they're relatively the same price. I mean, the Toyota Avalon comes in about $500 cheaper. But here's the thing. I don't see this as a competition for the Nissan Maxima or the Chrysler 300. You could take this Toyota Avalon. You can compare this with any four-door luxury European car on the market today. This is one phenomenal vehicle.
Yeah.
Talk about bang for your buck. And as you know, Toyotas never die, so it's going to stay on the road forever and ever. It's got all the bells and whistles. Also, tremendous mileage at 22 City 32 Highway. And it's got the best fuel economy of any car in its group. Johnny, I want you to talk about all of the various and sundry specs of this quiet, roomy, large trunk vehicle. But I got to tell you something. If you want a sedan, a four-door sedan that's got it all, for this, okay, $42,000 isn't chicken feed, let's face it. But this car...
It's got styling, too.
Oh, my gosh. Magnificent, chiseled styling with big grille. Beautiful. The headlights are very silhouetted and stealthy. I mean, they're just beautiful. They're LEDs. But the fact of the matter, and the interior leather trim is glorious. But here's the thing. This $42,000 car in anybody else's fleet is a $68,000 car and up. It's just incredible. All right, Johnny, give us some facts.
Well, I'm going to go back to statistics because one of the things that I put in the write-up that I did on the car, and people can find this out. I mean, they're not just read mine, but they can go to the Toyota website and find out a lot of things about the car. But of all the cars, there was a survey done of how long would you keep your car for 15, current car you have, would you keep it for 15 years? And they asked all these people, all these different cars. And the Avalon was seventh in scoring, which is pretty high when you consider all the cars that are out there these days. And so...
But wasn't the scoring, though, based on all the cars, but they were all Toyotas?
No, it was not all Toyotas. It was all these various cars. And Avalon was seventh. People would keep it for 15 years, which that's, we're back to what I said earlier. You buy a luxury car. This is a luxury car. This is the top end. Next step up is you have to go to the Lexus. So this is the top end of the Toyotas, Toyota Avalon, and it's a wonderful, beautiful, quiet, rides like a dream, got all the bells and whistles, and I'll mention some of those, but it's got all those kinds of things. It's at $42,000. You put the money in, and people are saying, if I own this, because I own this, I'm going to keep this car for at least 15 years. And that's another reason we're not selling nearly as many cars. Hey, I got one I love. I don't need another car. So I thought that was interesting. And, all right, our car had a 301 horsepower V6, 3.5 liter, double overhead cam. That V6 was really good for this car. They did a lot with this transmission, and I did a lot of explaining of some of these things. But the Avalon has a direct shift 8-speed transmission, and it's got an ECTI. ECTI transmission controls the torque and the clutch hydraulic pressure during shifting to make it smooth. And this is the only. It's not a fault, or I don't know if it's a flaw, or whether it's just something they need to look at. But the only thing that I found on this car that I thought was interesting after I knew that, and Lori is actually the one who pointed it out to me, and she said, "Well, I don't think the first when it shifts from first to second, I think that's pretty clunky. It's not real smooth." And I would get it out, I'd be at a stoplight, start up, and I thought, "Well, I don't see anything. It seems perfect to me." And then I noticed when I would come to a stop sign and turn left, I think it was left, when I turned left, I would get this big thump when it went from first to second. Now, as soon as I straightened out, I didn't get any more, there was no more noise, no more anything. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was interesting, and I even put it in the write-up that you put in the paper.
Yeah.
And that was, you need to look at this. I said, Toyota, you need to look at this. Maybe this was just an anomaly. I don't know. But you ought to try your cars, turn to right and left, and see if the transmission does it for you. Because I think it's something that they ought to look at when you're paying this kind of money for what you consider luxury cars. I don't know. I just think it's something you ought to address.
Let me just kick in here. Tremendous audio system, 14 speakers. I loved the center console. I loved the fact that the controls were exactly where you expected them to
be. I agree with that, yes.
You didn't have to search for where the button was to open up the gas.
Or start the car.
Start the car, anything like that. We're exactly where you wanted to be. I love the fact that you could see the outside temperature on the panel. It had a wireless phone charger, which is always very helpful. You could change from sport to normal on your panel.
And the trunk. I always go back to whatever the – what was that movie?
How many bodies can you fit in?
Yeah, you could get two, maybe three bodies in this trunk. You know, it was a big trunk, let's just put it that way.
One of the neat things, I mean, it's got pre-collision. It's got,
it's got Toyota Safety Sense P system. And that's called TSSP.
Rear cross traffic alert.
Yeah, pre-collision, rear cross traffic, lane departure, automatic high beams, dynamic radar control, cruise control. That's the one that monitors what's going on ahead of you and keeps you out of trouble.
And the cute thing is that on the dashboard, it's got this little, representation of the car, and it shows you where you're compromised if you're too close to something in the front, the sides, or the back.
Yeah.
Then that will blink and highlight in a sharp color, so that you can see, where you're compromised with the vehicle. But it shows this little,
it's like a surround camera.
Yeah, it is a surround camera, but it shows
your left front has got a red blinking things on it. Says you're too close over here. So yeah.
But once again, great pickup, obviously. Powerful car, easy to handle, quiet. We've got to stress that. It was very quiet, very roomy for both front and passenger seats. Huge trunk space. I don't want to start saying things like it could hold two bodies, but it held a lot of groceries. Let's put it that way.
Let me say something. Let me talk about some of those, because you asked me to, but the Moroni has things on it like VSC, which is Vehicle Stability Control, track. Which is traction control, ABS, anti-lock brake system, brake force distribution, EBD, brake assist, BA. You know, you have to know what these things are to actually understand what you're getting on the car. And BA doesn't mean Buenos Aires. It means, braking assist. And I put on there where you can actually get more information. But the things on this car that I thought were also good, it had a safety and convenience package, anti-theft system, and an engine immobilizer. And I never think about that, but with these keys, the key you just carry around in your pocket, you get in and you push the button. Well, you can't start that car without the key. And I think about that when I get in the car and don't have the key and I push the button, it says no key is recognized. But you can't start the car. That's my point. They unless you're very sophisticated, you can't steal the car.
And here's something that's very beautiful.
It is being stolen. Even with these new keys, they're not as secure as people thought. Like, they broke into a Land Rover in 10 seconds. Yeah. So it just came out. So it was unbelievable. However, there are ways to mitigate that, and I think that's going to probably come out in the next few days on how you could really be a lot safer. Because evidently, there's if your the key is too close to the vehicle, it might allow somebody who wants to steal it to override that. So it's all technology. So evidently, it's the same way like our banks are safe,
Right.
Which they're not.
Right.
So,
right.
Just
correct.
Just to wrap this up.
We had a moonroof.
Yeah. Ours was one of seven colors. Ruby flare with the pearl. Ruby flare pearl was the color. Beautiful red with the light gray.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Ruby flare pearl.
It was?
Yeah. With a light gray interior.
Yes, getting well, old.
No, you're not. You just didn't notice. But here's the thing, and this is what I love about Toyota. The optional equipment, which Johnny just described, was $1,100, okay? The delivery and a carpet mat package, which was $248. The total for the options is roughly $1,600, $1,700. The beauty is that for $42,000, you get everything. It's all complete.
Mm.
I love it when you can find a car and what you get is what you pay for, and not here's what it costs for MSRP, and then you're going to add another $10,000, $15,000 in options. You know, so this is a complete package. This is a car, like I said, Toyota lasts forever.
Well, that's, again, safety is one of those things they immediately figured out, we can't have this as an option. You cannot have safety as an option. It has to be part of the base of the model of the car. Whatever it is, it needs to be included. People are looking for that. And it's worked. It's really worked. Go ahead, Anna.
Oh, I'm speechless. Well, what I was going to say.
Well, that's unusual.
What I was going to say is our time is up. And I'm shuffling over to tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week.
Okay.
Except I don't have it in front of me, so here we go.
It's the Mazda Miata, isn't it? The MX-5?
Yes. Next week we'll be talking about the Mazda MX-5.
Pocket rocket.
Which Johnny loved, and it's a lovely car. And
brought back a lot of memories.
So we'll talk about that next week, but our time is up, Hezzy.
Hezzy,
I know,
thank you.
It really went too quickly. It went too quickly.
Oh, I enjoyed
it. And
it.
We still haven't been able to reminisce about all the cars that are no longer here, and we don't know why.
I know.
We will.
We will. We've got a whole set of cars.
We're too busy talking about the cars that are here.
Well, we're excited about them, and that's kind of neat.
They're the ones we want to celebrate.
All right,
my friend.
Have a great week.
Have
stay cool.
Week.
You too.
Talk to you
enjoy.
Later.
All the best to you both. Thank you.
To you too, thanks.
Oh, my God. Is this so exciting or what? I mean, the Toyota Avalon four-door touring sedan. And I don't know, when John and Lori drive these vehicles, I mean, there's so much to tell. And it gets so complex. You know, life is complex, including the automotive industry. And it touches every aspect of our lives, one way or the other. So very, very compelling. So if you have an opportunity, you could also find the article that they wrote on the Yonkers Tribune website. And interestingly enough, we also posted Pinehurst Toyota. They're based in Southern Pines, and they serve Aberdeen and Sanford, Pinehurst, Fayetteville, Rayford, and Hamlet, all North Carolina. They sell new and used cars, and of course they've got Toyota service and genuine Toyota parts and stuff like that. You could find them at www.pinehursttoyota.com. And then if you're in this general area, in the Yonkers, Westchester County area, there's, of course, Westchester Toyota. And they're based in Yonkers, and you could find them at www.westchestertoyota.com. So I think you'll find them really interesting, and they certainly are exemplary in representing the models that they sell, such as the Toyota at Pinehurst Toyota, and such as Toyota in Westchester Toyota, which is like a no-brainer. So that's the story there. I hope you'll enjoy that. And let's quickly move on then to see what else is going on in our neck of the woods. Let's first find out what's going on in the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll get started with national and international news.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Stung Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a stenopad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914 562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. So if you are interested in reaching out to the Yonkers Tribune, they've got a new number, which is not only their office number, but their cell number, their text number, and their voicemail number, all the same, 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. So let's look at some of the most compelling news, and certainly starting off with the United States. Evidently, nearly 700 immigrants were detained in the largest U.S. raid in a decade. So U.S. officials raided seven Mississippi food processing plants yesterday, arresting 680 mostly Latino workers in the largest workplace sting in at least a decade. The raid is part of President Donald Trump's crackdown on illegal immigration. The raids of various chicken plants were planned months ago and happened just hours before Trump visited El Paso, Texas. And El Paso is the majority Latino border city, where on Saturday, a white 21-year-old suspected gunman reportedly posted a manifesto railing against a Hispanic invasion of Texas before opening fire in a supermarket. So the workers were taken to a military hangar where they were processed for immigration violations. This is in Mississippi. TV footage showed lines of arrested migrants heading to buses parked outside the processing plants with their hands behind their backs under the watchful eye of ICE agents. And nearly 100 families, friends, and residents looked on in shock, shouting, "Let them go, let them go." A tearful 13-year-old boy, whose parents are from Guatemala, waved goodbye to his mother, a worker, as he stood beside his father. And some employees tried to flee on foot but were captured. And Angelica Salas, the executive director of the Coalition for Humane Immigration Rights, said, quote, "When we seek unifying words and acts to heal the nation's broken heart, President Trump allows so many families and communities to be torn apart," she said. Well, Bill Chandler, an executive director of the Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance, called the terrible raids another effort to drive Latinos out of Mexico, and he blamed Trump for fanning racism with his past incendiary comments about immigrants. And he continued, said, "This is the same thing that Trump is doing at the border with the Border Patrol," referring to the increased crackdown on migrants coming into the United States. It seems that about 600 U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents fanned out across the plants operated by five companies surrounding the perimeters to prevent workers from fleeing. Mississippi is the nation's fifth largest chicken-producing state, and the plants are tough. Processing jobs have mainly been filled by Latino immigrants eager to take whatever work they can get. And chicken plants dominate the economies of Morton and other small towns east of Jackson. So based in Park Ridge, Illinois, Koch is one of the largest poultry producers in the United States with operations in Mississippi and five other states. So the company didn't respond to telephone calls and emails seeking comment. Well, Matthew Albence, ICE's acting director, told the Associated Press in an interview on Wednesday in Pearl, just down the road from the Koch plant, that the raids could be the largest ever workplace operation in any single state. And asked about their coinciding with Trump's visit to El Paso, Albence reported, "This is a long-term operation that's been going on." He said raids are racially neutral and based on evidence of illegal residency. So the companies involved could be charged with knowingly hiring workers who are in the county illegally and will be scrutinized for tax document and wage fraud, Albence had said. You see, major immigration raids were common under President George W. Bush, including one at a kosher meatpacking plant in Postville, Iowa, back in 2008 that resulted in about 400 arrests. And President Barack Obama avoided them, limiting workplace immigration efforts to low-profile audits. So Trump has resumed workplace raids, but the months of preparation and hefty resources they require make them rare. So that's what's going to, that seems to be the interesting thing. And somebody said, we are fully cooperating with the authorities in their investigation and are navigating a potential disruption of operations. PICO, based in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, said in a statement, the company added that it participates in E-Verify, a government program to screen new hires for immigration status. That's one thing, though. You know, if these companies, whoever they happen to be, did not check the immigration status through the E-Verify system, it is the company that must be fined. And they're the ones that should be fined in order for them to stop hiring people that are not legally not legal immigrants, because it should be able, these jobs should be able to go to people who are legal immigrants, because everyone's looking for a job. So, you know, it's just, I guess, a perspective of how you look at things, and we'll see where it goes. It is a very difficult job working in these chicken factories, that is for sure. Well, let's move on to see what else is going on in the world. And there's quite a lot. This is a big thing with regard to climate change. Evidently, a new report has called for an overhaul of farming and eating habits. So this is really quite compelling. And, you know, let's hear this report, which I think is really quite interesting. And it's only about a minute long. Bear with me a moment. We'll get started very shortly. Okay, one second. Okay.
These images of barren fields, of cattle dying of thirst, are now common in many regions in the world. Heat waves are drying out the land. A land that's overused and damaged by changing weather. Imagine what these fields will look like in 30 years when temperatures are higher and there are billions of extra people to feed. That's what the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has studied in its latest report. And it says the current use of land is not sustainable. Extensive agriculture generates about one quarter of greenhouse gas emissions, and it makes land less productive. But the group says there are solutions. For example, using less chemicals, cutting down food waste, and also cutting down meat consumption. Humans should revise their eating habits because meat production generates toxic gas. For example, almost half of all methane emissions. Having an almost vegetarian diet based on nuts, seeds, grains, and vegetables could bring enormous potential. It could slow down global warming while bringing food security to all of humanity.
Those are the realities, so it's going to be very interesting to see if we do change, you know, concepts. And that's going to be really compelling. Now, it's also interesting what's happening in the Americas. An ex-billionaire from Brazil has been rearrested in a corruption probe. It seems that Brazilian ex-billionaire Ike Batista, who has been under house arrest pending an appeal of a 30-year jail sentence, was arrested again on Thursday as part of a sprawling corruption probe, officials had said. Batista, once the richest man in the Latin American country, was detained in Rio de Janeiro after a judge issued an order for his arrest, federal police advised. Judge Marcelo Bretas also ordered the arrest of Batista's associate Luis Artur Correa, along with four others, G1 News, a global news site, I think they call it Globish. One news site reported. They are suspected of insider trading and money laundering, G1 said. An emblem of Brazil's boom years, Batista amassed a fortune with investments in mining and oil that in 2012 put him in seventh place on Forbes' list of the world's wealthiest. But by 2013, a downturn in the commodities market wiped out a fortune that had been estimated at $30 billion. He later came under scrutiny by investors in the vast car wash quote-unquote operation, which revealed mass corruption by public officials linked to Petrobras, the petroleum giant that produces from Brazil. That's how they came up with the name Petrobras. In July of 2018, he was sentenced to 30 years in prison for corruption and money laundering. He was found guilty by a Rio court of paying a $16.5 million bribe to the ex-governor of Rio, Sergio Cabral, allegedly through the fictitious sale of a gold mine. So it's truly amazing the sort of stuff that goes on. Now, one second here. I wanted to check one other thing in the local region. Maybe I've already covered that. No, this is what I wanted to talk about too. Evidently, there's a hero's welcome for the Tour de France winner. His name is Bernal in his Colombian hometown. So evidently, cyclist Egan Bernal, the first Latin American to win the Tour de France, got a hero's welcome from thousands of fans in his hometown of Zipaquirá, Colombia, on Wednesday. The 22-year-old Bernal, the youngest rider to win the race in 110 years, promised a cheering crowd in the main square of his small Andean city that he would pursue further triumphs. I want to have my feet on the ground to continue to work as I have been until now, to enjoy the bike. And if someday we can win another Tour de France, we'll try for a third. If we win the third, then a fourth and a fifth, Bernal had said. This is like a drug. You win one and you want more and more, said the climbing phenomenon who gave Team Ineos, formerly Team Sky, their seventh title in the last eight editions. I want people to feel this triumph as their own. Bernal was crowned the Tour winner in July after retaining the overall leader's yellow jersey during the 21st and final stage. Beating teammate and defending champion Geraint Thomas of Britain by 1 minute 11 seconds. Bernal started his training as a cyclist at 8 years of age. His former coach still trains young riders who he said idolized Bernal. He's a superhero for many, said mechanical engineer Jairo Sierra, 43, who drove from Bogota, the nearby capital, to attend the celebration where attendees chanted, "Champion Egan, champion," waving a cyclist figurine that she fashioned out of yam. 35-year-old Andrea Malaver said that Bernal had brought joy to many of her fellow citizens. "He's an inspiration for all Colombians," she said. Colombian riders, accustomed to the thin air and steep slopes of the Andes, have a long, proud tradition of being competitive on the tour. Rigoberto Urán and Nairo Quintana also rode in this year's race, Quintana Giro d'Italia and Vuelta a España champion, had finished runner-up to the Tour in 2013 and 2015. The race was just Bernal's second Grand Tour after finishing 15th last year. On stage, the cyclist echoed the hopes of many in the crowd that he will enjoy a long career. There'll be Egan for a while. So very, very interesting, very compelling story as well. And let me just quickly look to see if there's anything else here on the local scene which you might find interesting. And this is with respect to Trump's tense visits to El Paso and Dayton in the wake of the mass shootings. So listen to this report. Bear with me a moment. Less than about a minute, than 2 minutes in length. Bear with me a moment. We'll be right on to it. Oh, my goodness.
It was a controversial visit even before he touched down. At a time of national tragedy, U.S. presidents have traditionally used the power of their office to unify the nation. But as Donald Trump walked down the steps of Air Force One in El Paso, the crowds of protesters weren't far away.
His hate speech has inspired people who might be prone to violence, and I see it as a direct result.
One of the Democratic hopefuls for the presidency pointed his finger at Trump for his repeated provocative statements on immigrants. We live in a country where we have a president who demonizes communities like this one, who says that those from Mexico are rapists and criminals and warns of invasions and infestations. El Paso's representative in Congress, a Democrat, refused to meet him, accusing him of causing pain to El Paso's overwhelmingly Hispanic community.
No to hate, no to bigotry, no to racism, and yes to love, yes to love.
Trump himself steered clear of directly addressing accusations that his anti-immigrant rhetoric could have incited Saturday's shooter to gun down 22 people. Instead, he praised the work of police officers and hospital staff.
We went to the hospital, just came from the hospital. We met with also the doctors, the nurses, the medical staff. They have done an incredible job.
Before landing in El Paso, Trump used Twitter to lash out at Democratic lawmakers and the press. Despite mounting criticism, he insists he's bringing the nation together.
Okay. Let's just move on to see what else is happening in our neck of the woods before we move on beyond. And there was one other thing I thought that I saw here. Bear with me a second. Yes, this is what was important. We're going to be speaking to Jose Roman tomorrow. We'll speak to him in Puerto Rico, and he'll be on at 10 o'clock, and we'll speak to him about what's been going on in Puerto Rico and the change in government. Well, evidently, Puerto Rico gets its third governor in a week, starting to make, Mount Vernon look like it's normal. Anyway, it seems that Justice Secretary Wanda Vasquez became Puerto Rico's new governor on Wednesday after weeks of political turmoil and hours after the island's Supreme Court declared Pedro Pierluisi's swearing in a week ago unconstitutional. Accompanied by her husband, Judge Jorge Diaz, and her daughter, Vasquez, took the oath of office in the early evening at the Supreme Court before leaving without making any public comment. Quote, I will continue to focus on helping our people regain their way in an orderly and peaceful fashion, she said in a statement in which she promised to assume the position with, quote, humility and commitment, end quote. The High Court's unanimous decision, which could not be appealed, settled the dispute over who will lead the U.S. territory after its political establishment was knocked off balance by big street protests spawned by anger over corruption, mismanagement of funds, and a leaked obscenity-laced chat that forced the previous governor and several top aides to resign. But it was also expected to unleash a new wave of demonstrations because many Puerto Ricans have said they don't want Vasquez as governor. It is concluded that the swearing in as governor by the Honorable Pedro R. Pierluisi Urrutia, the named Secretary of State in recess, is unconstitutional, the court said in a brief statement. Pierluisi said that he had stepped forward to help islanders, quote, in the best good faith and desire to contribute to the future of our homeland, end quote, but he would respect the court's ruling. I must step down and support the Justice Secretary of Puerto Rico, the Honorable Wanda Vasquez Garcia. He said in a statement before she was sworn in, people began cheering in some parts of San Juan after the ruling was announced, and Puerto Ricans were expected to gather later outside the governor's seaside mansion in the capital's colonial district, some to celebrate the court's decision and others to protest the incoming governor. In the early afternoon, someone yelled through a loudspeaker near the residence, Pierluisi out, the Constitution of Puerto Rico should be respected, exclamation point, and end of quote. It was the correct decision, said Sio Mari Morales, a waitress and student who works a block away, adding that those in power, quote, are used to doing what they want, end quote. And Puerto Ricans are physically and emotionally exhausted and want an end to the political turmoil, she said. They should just hold fresh elections, hit restart like a PlayStation game. Batita Caraballo, retired nurse from the island's eastern city of Guabo disagreed with the court. I think they are playing with the people, and I don't know. Maybe they have someone they want, and that is why they are doing this, Caraballo had said. Pierluisi was appointed Secretary of State by then-Governor Ricardo Rossello while legislators were in recess, and only the House approved his nomination. Pierluisi was then sworn in as governor on Friday after Rossello formally resigned in response to the protests. Puerto Rico's Senate sued to challenge Pierluisi's legitimacy as governor, arguing that its approval was also necessary, and the Supreme Court decided in favor of the Senate. So the Senate had also asked the court to declare unconstitutional a portion of a 2005 law which said that a Secretary of State need not be approved by both House and Senate if they have to step in as governor. Puerto Rico's constitution says its Secretary of State has to be approved by both chambers. So the court agreed that the law's clause was unconstitutional. Today, this tribunal speaks with a single voice, loud and clear. Justice Roberto Feliberti Cintron said in his written opinion, quote, the constitutional norms do not allow the absurdities and legal technicalities to contravene our democratic system of government. In a separate opinion, Justice Eric Koltoff Caraballo said that Puerto Rico has sheltered and rather has suffered upheaval like never in its modern history, and the people need calm and security that things will soon return to order. Senate President Thomas Rivera Schatz praised the court ruling in a triumphant statement. With absolute legitimacy, we will seek true peace and stability, he said. Six of the court's nine judges were appointed by governors from the pro-statehood New Progressive Party, to which both Pierluisi and Rivera Schatz belong. Vasquez, a 59-year-old former prosecutor, is to serve out the remainder of Rosselló's term and to seek the election of the ballot in November 5. So that is what was so compelling there. Well, that's our story for today. It's just about 11 o'clock. Tomorrow is another day. We're going to speak to Jose Roman, as I told you, in Puerto Rico, in San Juan. And then we're going to speak to Nader Sayers from 10:30 to 11. And with time permitting, we'll cover international news. So thank you again for being with us. All the best to you. And let me go back to our studio screen. And bear with me a moment here. Okay, where are we? All right, we're here. And let me just quickly check. One second here. All right. It looks like we're fine. All right. I think that we don't have anything more to mention to you. So just have a great day. Thank you for being with us today. And definitely all the best. Goodbye.